Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. One of the great innovations of American culture will be showcased dramatically for the first time Labor Day night when Discovery Channel presents Harley and the Davidsons. Executive producer John Boland joins me next in an internet radio exclusive from Los Angeles. Toucans do more than decorate boxes of Kellogg's Fruit Loops. They are alive, real, and the subject of a global movement to preserve them. Animal Planet offers that matter tomorrow in Toucan Nation. And the award-winning director of that special, Paula Heredia, speaks out next half hour here in New York. And the U.S. Marine has a killing field back home in Quarry, Cinemax's next new drama launching next month. After the top of the next hour, we'll get the detail from Emmy-winning executive producer and director, Greg Yatanis. Also ahead, NBC subpar Olympics closer, ballroom dance back on public television, and our classic trivia question of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you, as always, by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. Happy start of the week to you wherever you are, and welcome to the program All About Television. 82 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. Delighted to have you with us. First of three episodes this week as we continue starting our 10th year on the air this month. Second, first of two episodes that are on for 90 minutes today and Wednesday. We have a fantastic group of guests all week long. So be with us starting right now. If you have a question or comment for any of our guests today, you know what to do. Give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. And we've got our chat room going, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com. Get 662 or Rick Ray, my friend from Philadelphia. They're both in the room. If you have a question or comment, don't want to use the phone. That's okay. Use the room. That's why it's there. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. John Nolan, executive producer of Harley and the Davidsons, premiering Labor Day night on Discovery Channel, will join us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. NBC attracted less than half the viewership of the 2012 London Olympics finale with last night's closing Olympic ceremony for Rio de Janeiro. About 15 million viewers watched the Rio Games wrap, compared to some 31 million viewers from London. That was the most watched closing ceremony over the last four decades. Still, despite overall lower viewership from London 2012, NBC's Rio coverage in primetime dominated the ratings the last 2.5 weeks, and it also broke ground on presenting multiple channel primetime coverage in English using NBCSN, Bravo, and on Saturday night, USA Network. And on selected nights, NBC Universo showcased live coverage of soccer, boxing, and other events in Spanish. It didn't take long for the Key half of Key and Peele to find new TV employment. Keegan-Michael Key will co-star in Friends from College, a new comedy series launching on Netflix next year. Friends deals with a group of Harvard grad 40-somethings at turning points in various relationships. Nat Faxon, Annie Parisi, and Fred Savage also co-star. Husband and wife filmmakers Nick Stoller and Francesca Del Banco will put the series together here in New York. And there's more Netflix news out this afternoon. The service will offer a new series based on the classic Anne of Green Gables novels next year. The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, otherwise known as the CBC, will partner with Netflix on this venture and launch it in Canada ahead of Netflix's global debut. Emmy winner, writer-producer Mariah Wally Beckett of Breaking Bad and lately Flesh and Bone, who was on last November on Stars, will pen Anne. And Will Rogers director Nick Caro will direct. It is believed to be Caro's first series in television outside of her native New Zealand. And finally, remember those annual ballroom dance specials on PBS, your local PBS station? American Public Television will go extended Strictly Ballroom the next 2 months. 6 one-hour specials featuring World Dance Sport Federation competitions from Europe, Asia, and Russia are on tap, focusing on semifinal and final round routines. The stops along the way will include Helsinki, Finland, Wuhan, and Shanghai, China, and Moscow. And again, that will be over the next 2 months, various times, through American Public Television affiliates around the country. And that is news notes for today. Some of you may ride Harley Davidson motorcycles around, but you may not know how did Harley Davidson got started. Well, it got started way back when, thanks to the founders Walter and Arthur Davidson and their famous friend, Bill Haley, or Bill Harvey, I should say. But it isn't until Labor Day night that this amazing combination that put together such an iconic American company will finally have their life story and the formation of the enterprise dramatized for the very first time on television. And that will happen on Labor Day night at 9 p.m. Pacific time, that's Monday, September 5th, with the premiere of a three-night miniseries, Harley and the Davidsons. It's the second miniseries in the history of Discovery Channel. The first was Klondike 2.5 years ago. Joining us live, an interview exclusive from Los Angeles, executive producer of Harley and the Davidsons, John Goldwyn. John, great to have you here.
Thank you, Simon.
Are you surprised that until your call last year to make this miniseries that nobody ever thought about turning this American icon enterprise into a miniseries?
I think we were incredibly fortunate that it hadn't been done. And it was a very fortunate for us that, and the credit really belongs to Raw Television, one of the partners there, Dimitri Deganis, who had the idea to do this show with the Discovery Channel. It was the perfect show, the perfect idea, the perfect brand to launch, or to relaunch, I should say, Discovery's whole scripted platform. So, yeah, I was amazed nobody had done it.
How did he come up with the idea? Is he a Harley Davidson fan? Was he someone who researched the topic? How did he come up with the idea?
Well, he and his partner Bart Layton have a company called Raw UK, and they're principally a reality television company that work outside of London, and they have an enormous research department because they're always looking for stories for what they call factual TV, what we call reality TV in America, and they found this and they thought, oh, this might be something, and when Rich Ross joined the Discovery Channel about 2 years ago, he had a meeting with Dimitri, and Dimitri presented him with this idea potentially as a scripted show, and Rich Ross leapt on it, and that was when I joined as a producer with Discovery, and Rich came to me and said, we'd like you to get involved with this and help get it made, and that was how it all began, and it fit, just dovetailed perfectly with the kind of thing that the viewers of the channel like, because most of them are, a lot of them are, as we've discovered, are motorcycle enthusiasts, and tinkering with bikes, with cars, it's a big part of what the channel is all about, so it dovetailed really nicely with already what they're enjoying on Discovery.
Whether or not you have ridden a Harley Davidson, or a motorcycle for that matter, what about this company and its formation are people going to find out from this series that will surprise them?
Well, I guess the first thing I would say to you is it's a distinctly American story in the best possible sense of that phrase. It's about friendship and brothers, about friends and brothers who are just possessed of an idea. They've got a kind of ambition that they want to fulfill. They decided that they were going to build a motorcycle at a time when there were 10 million bicycles in America, and everybody in the country was trying to figure out a way to make a bicycle do something other than what it was designed to do. In Ohio, a couple of Wright brothers, guys named the Wright brothers, were trying to make it fly. In the Midwest, a lot of people were trying to strap engines on them and figure out how to make them go. And already motorcycles were being manufactured, but the thing that made the story of Bill Harley and Arthur Davidson and Walter Davidson so unique is that these were Milwaukee guys. They were tough. They were flinty. They were first-generation Americans. They all came from European families from Scotland and from England, and they lived in a very tough part of the world, and they wanted to make one that was louder and faster that could go anywhere. And the truth of it is that Bill Harley wanted to design a bike with an engine on it that could make it possible to go to his favorite fishing hole and come back in time to make dinner with his parents. And the idea was that it would be able to go in the woods. And that was what they designed. They designed the toughest, fastest bike up to that point that had been manufactured. And I think the other thing that's interesting is that the leader in that field at the time was the Indian Motorcycle Company, under the Hendy Manufacturing Company. A guy named George Hendy owned it and ran it. And he was determined to put Harley and Arthur and Walter Davidson out of business. He realized they were competitive. He realized they were making a superior machine. And he didn't want the competition. And he did everything in his power to try to destroy them, and he didn't succeed. And that's really what the first episode of the show is about. It's about their their intrepid pursuit of fulfilling their dream of making this bike happen. And all the obstacles that were thrown in their path, and the way they, in a very nimble way in which they were able to maneuver around those obstacles and stay true to the thing that they really wanted to create. They stayed true to their vision. And so you root for them, and you root for their success, and you root for their triumph financially and in terms of the engineering prowess of the bike that they made, which was, in fact, at this time, the best motorcycle made in America, and for their growth. And for them to actualize the thing that they all dreamed of making happen for themselves.
John Dolan is an executive producer on Harley and the Davidsons. It's the first of a planned line of Discovery Channel scripted series and miniseries, and it premieres Labor Day night. That's Monday, September 5th, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, with parts 2 and 3 also going on at that very same hour. John joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. Delight to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Thanks for kicking off your week with us. And if you have a question or comment for John, give us a call. Absolutely. 646-652-2906. Or you in our chat room, SimonApple04. We're going to welcome guests 665 and 671 into the room. As mentioned before, this is the first of three episodes that we are doing this week, and the first of two 90-minute doubleheader shows that we've got for you. We have another one coming up on a special edition on Wednesday, and we got a doozy for you. You're going to have the opportunity to hear not one, but two of the people nominated for this year's Emmy Awards. From Fox's popular series Gotham on Monday nights, we've got the cinematographer, otherwise known as the director of photography, Crescenzo Nettori, and one of three directors nominated for the popular HBO series Veep, starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus, director Dale Stern. And in between, the popular TV critic of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Rob Owen, will talk to him about his recent time at the TV Critics Tour in Los Angeles. We'll get his thoughts about the Emmys, maybe NBC's Olympics coverage, his predictions for the fall season, a whole lot more. It's all coming up on a special 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, this Wednesday, less than 48 hours from now, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. John, once you got this miniseries going, what was the toughest part about putting it together?
Well, just a couple of things. The first was finding a location where we could shoot it that looked like Milwaukee at the turn of the century. And it turned out that that was in Europe. It was in Romania, because Romania was fairly undeveloped. They had a wonderful studio that we were able to use, and a back lot that we were able to use called the Castel Studios. But that became the first challenge, was finding a location where we could literally build and recreate turn of the century Milwaukee, which we did. And I think when you see the show, you're going to be incredibly impressed with how real it feels and look, the level of authenticity. But the second and the most, I think the most ferocious challenge we had was the motorcycles, because it was extremely important to us to recreate authentically the bikes that they rode in that period. And our story begins right around 1901, 1902, and it goes up to 1935 with the design of the Knucklehead, which was the world's first superbike. It was capable of speeds of up to 136 miles an hour. And when you see that bike at the end of episode 3, you are yanked into present time, because it's a design that you recognize. So the challenge was finding somebody who could do that, and we found a wonderful guy named Alex Wheeler out of South Africa, who had done all the on-camera vehicles for Mad Max Fury Road. And we worked from all of the original drawings that were provided that Bill Harley drew that were provided by the Harley Museum. And so we were able to replicate from the original designs the bikes throughout the various decades that we profile in the show. And that was a challenge. It took a lot of work. It took a lot of testing. And we also had to provide other bikes. We had to provide Indians, Popes, Excelsiors, because we have a lot of racing in all three episodes. And so we had to recreate all those races. And that was, in a funny way, the third challenge, but it really pertains to the second one, which is creating authentic bikes.
Before I ask about the cast, there's a very interesting quirkiness about one show's involvement with the cast. How much cooperation did Harley-Davidson give you in the making of the program?
Well, they were great. We never had a formal arrangement with Harley, but on the other hand, they were unbelievable to us. They opened their archives to us. I think they sensed, and we made sure that they were made very aware, but I think at the outset they sensed that we wanted to make a show that celebrated what they accomplished, The family still has a controlling interest in the company, even though it's a publicly held company. There are still descendants of the founders working at that company. They take their heritage extremely seriously. They have a fabulous museum. If you ever have a chance, I would urge you to go to the Harley-Davidson Museum in Milwaukee. It's an incredible place. They spent over $80 million building it out. And they made everything available to us, which made it possible for us to honor their legacy in terms of creating authentic bikes and quite frankly, hewing as close as possible to authentic facts in the story of Harley-Davidson and how it evolved. So they were wonderful to work with. And at one point, I early on took the cast. I took Mikhail Heisman, and I took Bug Hall and Robert Arameo, who play the three leads, back to Harley, and they spent a day in the museum with the archivists learning about the bikes, and I think for them it was an invaluable experience. They were great to work with.
Two of those three leads, and you just mentioned them, Michael Heisman and Robert Arameo, are both involved in Game of Thrones. Now, what are the odds that you would get two people from that popular series to be in your cast, in two key roles, one playing one of the Davidsons, one playing Harley?
I can only tell you that the great thing about Harley-Davidson is that the title of the show and what it is that we're selling was incredible bait for acting talent. And a lot, and Mikhail Heisman and Bug Hall, actually, are writers. In fact, Bug Hall, who plays Arthur in the show, traversed the United States on a motorcycle four times before he was 18 years old. And what you learn about people who ride, which is the thing that I think will appeal powerfully to riders who watch the show, is that it's a culture. And that's the thing that they knew we were going to kind of build out in all three episodes, is the culture of Harley-Davidson and how Harley-Davidson became that culture and what were the forces that led to it becoming that culture. And they were very excited about it. And as a result, we were able to get top-flight talent, among them Mikhail Heisman and Robert Arameo, who plays Bill Harley, who's in some ways sort of the soul of the show because he was its engineer. But yeah, that was very, very fortuitous for us. We were very fortunate they were available, and we felt very lucky to get them. But all three actors are wonderful in the show. Just great. Could not be happier with the cast.
Plus, your cast has a lot of interesting credits in their background, everything from Sleepy Hollow to EastEnders, the popular British soap opera that's still playing on many public television stations. Gabriel Luna, who was the star of Matador, the short-lived Del Rey Network series that we covered 2 years ago this summer, also in it. You've got some newcomers also named F. O'Shea and Sean Scully. So it's a very interesting cast in terms of background.
And Stephen Ryder, who was in Daredevil, is also in the show. And he was the first African-American. It was based on a character named Walter Johnson, who was the first African-American ever to get a franchise to sell motorcycles. And that franchise was given to him by Harley-Davidson in the 1930s. And that's one of the stories that we profile in the third episode of the show. So, yeah, we have Jessica Comancho, as you mentioned, from Sleepy Hollow. We have Gabriel Luna, as you mentioned. And so we're very excited. We built out the cast with people that are somewhat known in the world of television, but extraordinary performers in their own right in the parts that we've provided for them. We're very happy with how this cast came together.
Harley-Davidson is the second ever Discovery Channel miniseries. The first one was Klondike about 2.5 years ago, and Harley comes on at a very unusual time period, Labor Day night. This may be the first major miniseries ever to premiere on the night of Labor Day. That's Monday, September 5th, 9 p.m. East Pacific Time, parts 2 and 3 also on at the same hour. And John Garland is one of the executive producers on the project. He is with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum, who is you from the other coast, New York, the live with us, 80 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for John, don't be shy. Raise your voice. Use this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our third episode this Friday deals with, in part, a new series on Crackle, also premiering next month. It's called Startup. It takes place in Miami. It's about a group of subculture people in Miami who have an entrepreneurial bent. They want to get in the world of high tech, but they also end up getting in the world of high crime as well. We will speak with the executive producer, the writer and director of the series, Ben Kitai, will join us. And then 1 week from today on the program If you love Girl Code, and you love in particular a woman named Nicole Byer, you're in luck. We have her next Monday. Why? Because she is launching her own comedy series next month on MTV. It's called Loosely, Exactly, Nicole. Nicole Byer, live with us 1 week from today, 3:30 Eastern, special time period, 1.5 hour late as normal, 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. We have a phone call, John. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What's your name, and where are you calling from?
Hey, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, great to hear you out there, and you're on the line with John Golan of Holly and the Davidsons. Go for it.
Hey, John.
Hey.
Since there's so many, like, rabid motorcycle fans out there right now, and it seems like there's a lot of shows about motorcycles that are either on or coming on television now, sort of have two questions. One is it almost like a slam dunk to have a motorcycle show right now on television? And then B, since Harley-Davidson's such an American thing, do you think that this show will travel very well, like, around the world?
Those are two great questions. I'm glad you asked them. Let me answer the first. There's no such thing as a slam dunk in television anymore. You know, it's not like you open against your competition. You open against the world. You never know what's going to happen. I think the thing that separates out Harley-Davidson from, well, first of all, unlike, say, Sons of Anarchy, which is a brilliant show, ours is a celebration of creation. That's really what our show is. And I think in some respects, we're the only show I know of that takes you back to the origin story of how motorcycles, and specifically Harley-Davidson, came into being in America. And really what it does is it profiles these three men, and then it shows how they did what they did in order to survive and ultimately triumph, which is where the whole issue of racing comes in, which is something that I haven't seen a lot of in television, anything to do with motorcycles, and racing these antique bikes, these bikes that are now over 100 years old, and how flinty and courageous and crazy these guys were that rode these bikes without padding. They didn't have brakes. They rode in they're like velodromes. They were canted at 60 degrees. They were called motodromes, and then later mysteriously labeled murderdromes. And they raced these because of the centrifugal force, at 100 miles an hour on these slick board tracks, and many racers died on them, but they couldn't keep away from them, and they were really hot with the public. They were it was a spectacle sport, almost like a gladiatorial sport in its time, and in around 1914, 1915. So I think in that regard, we're showing an aspect of the motorcycle story that you haven't seen before, and we're certainly telling the story of three men whose story you've never heard before. So in that regard, what we're hoping is that we seize the interest of people who are riders, who love motorcycles, who maybe love Harleys, or if not Harleys, love motorcycles, and will be fascinated to hear and to watch the origin story. And then secondly, much to my surprise, Harley is a global brand. And that, interestingly, is a direct result of what Arthur Davidson did just before and after World War I. He actually traveled to Europe and opened franchises in Europe and in Asia. And as a result of, and he was the first motorcycle company executive to do that. And as a result of what he did, he established Harley-Davidson as an international brand a long time ago, well before anybody else. And frankly, before a lot of countries were developing their own motorcycles. And at one point, actually, they sold all of their pre-1934 designs to the Japanese, which is the thing that jump-started Japanese motorcycle production in the 1930s. So they were a force for a long time, and when we decided to make this show, we learned happily that, in fact, Harley-Davidson is very well-known internationally as well as domestically.
Awesome. Well, I'm totally looking forward to seeing this, and I'll probably watch it over several times.
That's great. I hope you do, and I hope you dig it and tell your friends. I think you're going to be really happy with it. So I think it turned out great.
Absolutely. So wishing you success and
thank you.
Success. And thanks, Simon.
You're very welcome, Rick. Take care. Rick Webber, good friend from Philadelphia, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Before we wrap up, I also want to give some shout-outs to some of the other people that are involved with Harley-Davidson, the writers of the series, Evan Wright, Seth Fisher and Nick Schenck, and Stephen Kay, who is the director of this miniseries. John, before we go, I mentioned that this is the first of a major push by Discovery into scripted series and miniseries. Any thoughts about what's coming up after this program?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, you're going to have on your show the guy who is the executive producer and showrunner of a very exciting series we're doing, and that person is Greg Utanis. In fact, I heard him talking before we all got on the phone. And we're doing, I guess you would refer to it as an anthology series, and it's about master criminals, and the first season is going to be about the hunt for Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber. And Greg is sort of the, how do I describe it? He's the director showrunner of that show. We're very excited to have him on board. He was a big get for us. As you said, he's an Emmy Award-winning director for House. And I've seen Quarry, and it's fantastic. It's great. And so that's going to start production toward the end of the year, the beginning of next year. And that will be the next thing up for Discovery, and we're super excited about it.
Before we go, I think we have another call. Let's see if we can take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow We Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello, you're on the air. No, I'm afraid not. Okay, we tried. And we'll see if we can get that caller back in the next half hour, talking about other things as well in the world of television. And John, are you going to be involved in that project as well? Or are you moving on to something different in Discovery?
Yep, nope, I'm going to be involved in that project as well.
Mm-hmm. And I believe also your sister network, TLC, has got a new dramatic series, their first ever, that is premiering tonight. That's the new Tyler Perry series.
Yeah, I have nothing to do with that.
I knew that, but I just wanted to alert our viewers if they haven't heard.
I'm sorry.
Either, I believe it's 8 or 9 o'clock Eastern Pacific Time. The first ever Tyler Perry series, not on Oprah Winfrey Network. That's coming up, I think, Too Young to Something. And I know the title has changed on and off, but I know it's a story about a woman in Washington politics who moved down south. And again, I believe that's on tonight, premiering on TLC. But we know they're coming up on Discovery Channel Labor Day night, the beginning of the three-part miniseries Harley and the Davidsons, with a terrific cast and terrific crew behind it. Labor Day night, Monday, September 5th, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, first installment, the other two installments of the Tuesday and Wednesday night, all at the same hour. Check your local listings for where Discovery Channel is available in your area on cable and satellite. And for more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.discovery.com, www.discovery.com. John Goldwyn, executive producer on Harley Davidson, thanks for joining us. Good luck with the series. Also, good luck with the other project you're involved with that we'll talk to Greg about lately. And we'd love to have you back, maybe both of you together, when that project is ready to go on Discovery later this year.
Thank you, and it was great to be on your show. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, John. All the greatest. Take care. Have a wonderful week.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
John Goldwyn, executive producer of Harley Davidson, joining us live from Los Angeles. Well, our kind of trivia question of the week shortly, but right now, some fine words from terrific people, our sponsors at Audible.com. If you love magic, you probably have Penn and Penn Jillette on your radar screen, and you might not know that Penn has recently written a book called Presto about how he did a little magic on himself in the neighborhood of losing 100 pounds, and much more, too. Well, that book is now an audiobook, and it is now available as a new release on Audible.com. And if you subscribe for 30 days on a free trial basis to Audible.com, we'll tell you how shortly, you can get that book or any one of over 180,000 titles to choose from. That's why Audible.com is known as the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information. You can listen to any of those titles on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now. Remember, you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, like Presto from Penn Jillette, and a one-month trial of service. And given that Audible.com is an Amazon.com company, you should know the customer service is right up there with the greatest in the universe. So check out this URL and make it happen. Audibletrial.com/televised. That's Audibletrial.com/televised. One free audiobook, 180,000 titles to choose from of every make and model. One-month trial, great customer service, everything to gain. And you can gain it at Audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com, the leader of digital audio entertainment that informs, entertains, and yes, inspires. Well, coming up next, our classic trivia question of the week, and then here in New York, we'll be joined by the award-winning director of a very interesting special on Animal Planet coming up tomorrow night. It's called Toucan Nation. And if you think toucans just decorate a box of Kellogg's Fruit Loops, You will have another thing coming after you hear award-winning director Paula Heredia. She will join us live after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the Shine Lord Radio Show. Check it out every week, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, Best of BTR is available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to Marvin Televised. First of three episodes this week. First of two 90-minute episodes, one today, one Wednesday, less than 40 hours from now. Simon Applegam with you live from New York, glad you're with us. We have some wonderful guests coming in the hour ahead if you just joined us, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, your voice and this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers good anywhere you're catching us across the country and around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. And we've got our chat room going, and going full blast today, SimonApple04. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. We can get 682 into the room, so use the phone or the room. Either way, we hear you. Coming up this half hour, our classic trivia question of the week, and an up segment by one of our guests this past Friday. But first, tomorrow night, Animal Planet has a special that's very interesting, especially if you're a fan of toucans, or if you just think toucans are something you see on a box of Kellogg's Fruit Loops. They've been there ever since the 60s. But if you don't know, toucans are a very special bird, and a bird that, in some parts of the world, is in danger. And that's what this special called Toucan Nation is all about. Joining me here in New York, the award-winning filmmaker and director of Toucan Nation, Paula Heredia. Paula, thank you very much for making the time.
Thank you. Thank you, Simon, for having me on your show.
It is a pleasure, Paula. How did you get involved in making this special?
Well, the story of Grecia, which is a toucan in Costa Rica that got half of the beak cut off in an act of abuse, it was a news that came out of a little TV station in Costa Rica, and it was such a horrible event that it was picked up by many news outlets around the world. I was actually in New York when I heard the news, and immediately called EVP John Hoffman at Discovery, and I said, listen, this is going on, and he actually had already heard the news, and we agreed that that was a story that needed to be told.
I'm happy we are an audio show, a sound show, because if you were to be descriptive about a toucan who had half of a beak broken off from his face, it probably would be the kind of detail that would come across as very grisly and horrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why did this incident draw so much attention internationally? What sort of propelled this this incident to gather your interest and a lot of other people's?
Well, what's interesting to us, I mean, there's many animals that get abused daily around the world, and you know, we all feel very strongly about our heartbreaks when we see something like that. What caught of attention about the case of Grecia, the toucan, is that people actually was moved enough to take action, and in Costa Rica, where, as you know, it's a country that prides itself for being a green country, for being very much in touch with nature and preservation of wildlife and wild animals. In this case came to like a bomb, and it moved a lot of people. It moved the scientists who decided that something needed to be done, and that they were going to push their own knowledge to see how they could come up with a design that would work for the bird, and that could be printed with high-end 3D printing technology, and also move all these citizens who came to realize that the laws in Costa Rica, even though are very progressive and are ahead to many other countries, it had holes that were not acceptable, and have began this campaign to change the law in Costa Rica to include a punishment for those who damage, torture animals in the wildlife, or even domestic animals.
How widespread is this issue of torturing toucans? Is it isolated in Costa Rica, or did you find the course of putting your special together that it's in a lot more places than we even think?
I don't think that the abuse is focused on toucans. I think that this is a case that happened, and you know, toucans are such an iconic bird for all of us. I mean, for everybody around the world, when we think about toucans, we think about, you know, happiness. We think about color. We think about, you know, our vacation. We don't think about abuse or animal abuse in this case. So I think that when the fact that many other animals are abused in daily basis, but that this was a toucan, made a big difference in people's heart and people's brain, and made this news to go so far in terms of both the international impact and the national impact in Costa Rica.
So what your special does is, in effect, say, you sort of jump off this particular incident and say, look, we have a general problem of animal welfare here, or, you know, these animals that are being deformed. It's not just toucans, it's other animals, maybe some of them on the verge of extinction or endangered species that are deformed, and it's up to us and it's up to governments and nations to pay attention and do something about it, and not just sit on the sidelines.
Yeah, I mean, we follow three storylines. I mean, we follow the toucan from the first moment that the toucan was brought to this rescue center called Suave in Costa Rica, and follow that story of, you know, we follow it for over a year. So at the beginning, nobody knew if the toucan was going to survive, and it was being fed manually, and follow that story to, you know, the ups and downs, and also to the end when the bird gets its beak. But we also follow the story of the research and brainstorming that this group of scientists that came together to design the beak, it went through, and it was not an easy task, and then follow that story to the design and the printing in 3D, with 3D technology to the end. But we also follow how people reacted and how people organize themselves to be activists and try to change this law, and that includes regular citizens, includes people in Congress, and the president himself. So it's this large picture that we present following these three stories. That at the end of the day, if someone who sees my film can feel that something can be done if you take action. I mean, the case of Costa Ricans are very particular, because Costa Ricans are people who believe that they do have rights, and that believe in those rights, and believe that they have the responsibility to act if they want to change something. I mean, that's not just in their culture, but also in their constitution, and take it very seriously. That's why if people see the film and see Costa Rica as an example of a case, a place, and an action that was taken to right a wrong, and can apply that in any part of in any other country in the world, that would be, I think, a big success from my point of view.
Paula Meridian is an award-winning filmmaker, Emmy Award included, and one of her works was a terrific special called In Memoriam, New York City, 9/11/01. Don't forget, next month is the 50th anniversary of 9/11. Her latest work is on Animal Planet tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. It's Toucan Nation, and she joins us live from New York.
Can I interrupt? Simon, can I
talk? Absolutely, Paula.
This show is on Wednesday, not tomorrow. It's Wednesday, the 24th, at 10 p.m. in 9 Central.
Okay, I guess it was a change, excuse me, from what I received. So let's make that change, and thanks for sharing that. So it's Wednesday night,
yeah,
and it's at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific?
10 p.m., 9 Central.
Got it. So it's 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and it's 9 Central, and I guess 10 p.m. Pacific also on Animal Planet. Thanks very much for the updated information. I do not have that with me, so really appreciate that.
Thank you,
Simon. So that is Wednesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, and 9 Central, 10 p.m. Pacific on Animal Planet. Paul joins us live here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. I'm Simon Applebaum with you live from New York and getting updated information, too, right here on our program. Happy to have you with us. As we said, this is the first of three episodes we are doing this week. We're on Mondays and Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. We're also on Wednesday this week. And coming up on our Wednesday episode, less than 48 hours from now, we'll have not one but two Emmy-nominated people for this year's Emmy Awards from the popular Fox drama Gotham. We will have the director of photography, who's up for an Emmy for the very first time, Crescenzo Nuttery, and one of three directors nominated this year for Beat, the popular HBO series starring Julie Lee Dreyfus. That's Dale Stern. Also with us, the wonderful TV critic from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Rob Owen, who came back a couple weeks ago from the TV critic store in Los Angeles. They're all with us Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And coming up on our show Friday, we've got, among others, Ben Cattay. He's the executive producer and writer director of the new Crackle drama, Startup. It's about a subculture in Miami that wants to get high-tech, but they also face high crime as well. And that will be premiering also in September. Ben joins us Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Paula, once you got involved in this investigation, how long did it take before that beak was found for the toucan?
Well, in the process of making the film, it took 2 years. I was actually shooting for almost a year and a half. And because things were happening, as you know, as you start editing and things continue happening, and I continue shooting. Particularly, the story that took the longest was for the scientists to find the best design and the best materials to print the prosthesis, and eventually the operation, which took a couple of days. But now we have a bird that it's a happy bird that can eat by himself, and it can wash his own feathers and can take baths. I mean, it's remarkable.
By the way, I want to welcome guest 702 in our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Happy to have you aboard. If you have a question or comment, put it in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. And guest 705 has just joined us in the chat room. So thank you for being involved. Thank you for listening. Get involved. Sooner you do, sooner we hear you. Paul, what is really special about this special is that it's not just one group of people who are dedicated to deal with this issue of animal welfare and attacks like this, but you also have local authorities, you have volunteers, you have people who have been in the animal rescue or welfare side of things for years, or newcomers. This is a really amazing process of people coming together from a lot of different sides to deal with this issue.
Yeah, and I think that it tells us a lot about where the conscience of people in nowadays is in terms of caring and being concerned about the welfare of all kind of animals, domestics or wildlife. In Costa Rica, obviously, they are lucky to have a large population of wild animals, and it's always this contradiction where, you know, people in the city grows and you know, we invade their life, their areas of wildlife. And what do you do? And I think that many parts of the world, you know, everybody has that contradiction. So Costa Rica is an example of how they deal with things. And I think that the concern that their welfare is our own welfare. I mean, we cannot, you know, they can be in nature without society, but there cannot be society without nature. And I think that that's something that everybody tries to be aware of and try to work for.
Mm-hmm. Do we know what happened to the person who perpetrated this crime on the toucan? Is this person been caught? Is that person in jail? What kind of sentence did this person get?
Very good question, Simon, because what happened is they don't know who did it, and usually if there was a law that would punish someone who did something like this, there would be an investigation. Resources would be put toward investigating what happened and who did it. But this is exactly what happened when the case of Grecia occurred, that the law doesn't punish anybody. So why to put resources to find out what happened? And activists and legislature realized that even though Costa Rica was the first country in the region to pass a law that was very revolutionary in 2012, banning sport hunting, that law said pretty much, if you kill a wild animal, you go to jail. But didn't say anything about if you abuse or if you torture a wild animal, and therefore there was no reason to do anything about this, and that was wrong. So the fight and the campaigns to modify it and to make a better law for wild animals and domestic animals in Costa Rica has to do with the fact that punishment has to be applied to those who abuse or torture animals.
Something else that's fascinating about this situation is that it may be one of the first examples of 3D printing as a way to work with prosthetics, whether in humans or for animals. And in fact, you got an exclusive interview with one of the key people involved in the 3D printing industry, a man named Charles Hull, who really got involved in this situation. Tell us about your time with him.
Well, Charles Hull, who is considered the father of 3D printing. I was lucky to interview him and spend some time with him. They have tested and done a number of prostheses for humans, and in a couple of instances they have tried for animals. But it's a whole new area that certainly Charles did not expect that this would ever happen. I mean, 3D printing is still very, very new. And the uses that people are using it for, they're still experimenting, and that's partially why it took so long for this beak to be built, because of course the precision is where, you know, is the right word, because the precision that you require for certain things, it doesn't matter when you're doing a toy or, you know, you're just doing a more rough quality object that it gets printed in 3D. But when you need a beak that has to have certain kind of a pressure over the stump of the bird that has to be of certain weight, and you begin looking at those details, and it has to fit in certain way, then it's a challenge for everybody. And they did an amazing job, and they really found the right material, and the printing is pretty amazing, and it can be seen in the film.
The film is Toucan Nation, and it is one of a series called Animal Planet Presents that runs regularly on that network, and it will be on Wednesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Animal Planet. We've got Paula Heredia. She's an Emmy-winning filmmaker who directed this project, and she's live with us here in New York on Tomorrow Will Be Televised this half hour. Simon Applebaum with you live right here on Blog Talk Radio. Delighted you're with us to kick off our week. First of three episodes that we are doing this week, two of them 90 minutes, today and Wednesday, and another event on Friday, too. If you have a question or comment for Paula, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or you go to chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and that's guest 702, 705, guest 665 also in the room. So don't be shy. Use the phone or the room. Either way, we appreciate what you say, because what you say matters. And joining us, I have a lot to say next Monday. The breakout star of MTV's popular girl called Nicole Byer will join me. She's got a brand new comedy series all her own, and it happens in September. It's called Loosely Exactly Nicole. I met Nicole early this year at MTV's Up Front here in New York, and let me tell you, she is one very funny, terrific person. You will enjoy her next Monday, special time, 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 Pacific, one half hour later than normal. It's right here, 1 week from today, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Paula, what are you doing from here? What's your next project? Do you want to stay dealing with this issue of animal welfare, animal environment, or are you going into a different direction with your work?
My work has taken me to many different directions. As you can see, I done films like In Memoriam, September 11, 2001 for HBO. Now it took a nation, but I also do a film in general. What my films say are, it's looking at the impact of events and how people come together and make change. And, you know, there's another film about Africa Rising is the name, where I look at the grassroots movement of people in Africa trying to abolish female genital mutilation. And right now I'm about to finish a film that I shot in El Salvador, where I look at how this country, and particularly a little town called Suchitoto, has come together and healed their wounds of war and find reconciliation after, you know, many years of turmoil. And I tell that story through the life of my mother, who was a former guerrilla leader in the guerrilla movement in El Salvador, and comes to that town after the war. And I shot that film for 8 years, so it's one of those films of love.
Before I let you go, Paula, I understand that the president of Costa Rica, Luis Guillermo Soltis, has an animal welfare bill in front of him and his nation's Congress. What is the status of that bill?
Well, that's exactly the bill that that the activists and some people in Congress, and including Luis Guillermo Solis, who is the president of Costa Rica, are trying to pass. And what's interesting about, you know, and the film follows that movement. And what's interesting about passing a law, you know, as you know, Congress is very similar the way it's run here and the way it's run in a place like Costa Rica. There's a lot of, you know, behind-the-scenes dealings and a lot of different interests that needs to be bring together or, you know, or not. But Costa Rican, according to their constitution, have also the power, as the people have the power to bring to Congress bills that are brought by popular initiative. So because of this bill brought by, you know, Luis Guillermo Solis and Congress, it's not moving very fast, I would say. The people, organizations representing the people, have brought together this popular initiative, which means that they need to collect 5% of signatures from 5% of those registered to vote, which in Costa Rica is about 200,000 people. And getting those signatures, they can bring to Congress the same bill. But Congress is obliged to review and vote on that bill within a very specific period of time. That's the way they actually passed the hunting law in 2012, which is a popular initiative law. And that's they're trying to do that. So between the bill that is in Congress right now and is being supported by Luis Guillermo Solis, the president of Costa Rica, and the organizations of activists and some of the legislature, and the parallel popular initiative that is being brought hopefully to Congress very soon, because in a couple of months they have raised like 160,000 signatures in the last 8 weeks. So that's gonna go much faster than the bill that is in Congress right now. So hopefully, one way or the other, Costa Rica will have a law that will protect all animals from abuse and killing.
program is Toucan Nation. It is the latest documentary special on the ongoing series Animal Planet Presents. And you can see it Wednesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on that very network. Check your local listings for Animal Planet available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program and the subject matter, too, here's where you go online, www.animalplanet.com. That's www.animalplanet.com. Paul O'Reilly, the director of Toucan Nation, thank you very, very much for joining us. And let's hope that for a lot of people who think that a toucan is only a symbol on a box of Fruit Loops, that they will be seeing your documentary, your special on Wednesday night, and they come away much more appreciative of what that animal is all about. Not just that animal, but other animals that are dealing with issues of endangered species, issues of possible extinction, and maybe, just maybe, a lot of great good can come out of that.
Thank you so much, Simon, for having me, and thank you, everybody.
It is a pleasure. Take care. All be ready. Keep us posted on the subject, too, by the way. Any developments on the bill and so forth, let us know. We will definitely update everyone on it. Thank you again, Paula. Take care. All the greatest.
Bye-bye.
Paula Aridia, the Emmy Award-winning filmmaker of Toucan Nation, joining me here in New York. And now it's time for our regular feature, the Classic Trivia Question of the Week. Get your thinking caps on, because if you are first with the correct answer before the week is out, you can win the new book, Twin Peaks FAQ, published by Applause. Here's our question this week. In what year did Maude, starring Bea Arthur, start on CBS? What year did the popular comedy Maude, starring Beatrice Arthur, start on CBS? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Be sure to enclose your name and your full mailing address. And if you are first with the correct answer before our Friday afternoon show, you can win the new Applause book, Twin Peaks FAQ. It's the book about the classic ABC mystery series put together by Mark Frost and David Lynch. Ran a year and a half on that network, and will be coming back in a revised form next year on Showtime, with many of the original cast members, with Mark Frost and David Lynch writing all the episodes, and David Lynch directing all of them. Twin Peaks FAQ can be yours if you know the answer to this week's classic trivia question. And if you want to use Twitter, you can. How? Use this hashtag, TWBT. That's Twitter hashtag TWBT to provide your answer. And that Twitter option is made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch, the folks inviting you to create your own social soundtrack. Learn how at www.hopscotch.com. www.hopscotch.com. I want to thank Marty Michael and the fine crew over there for making that Twitter option happen. If you just came in and didn't get the question, no problem. I will post it tomorrow on my own Facebook page and my Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. And because we have a Wednesday edition, we'll also have it for you on our Wednesday show. So once again, to get involved, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com, or use Twitter, hashtag TWBT. Remember, to win, you got to be in. So do so, and all the very best. Before we wrap up this half hour, let's give you Up as an Update, where we follow up on some of the guests and topics we had on this program. And last Friday, among our guests on another 90th edition of our show, was the Emmy Award-winning producer, writer John Tinker, whose credits include an Emmy-winning episode he wrote, co-wrote, should say, of Saying Elsewhere, and shows like Judging Amy, and others as well. He is currently working on the new Hallmark Channel series, Chesapeake Shores. That series premiered with a two-hour edition, which he did not work on. He came in with episode two a week and change ago. And that episode, which was presented, as I said, over a week ago, had 2.5 million viewers. That's 2.5 million viewers. It was the second-best premiere of a Hallmark Channel original series ever. By the way, Chesapeake Shores is the only original Hallmark Channel drama series that will premiere this year. The second episode, the first one John Tinker worked on, was last night, and we don't know yet how the ratings for that did. But I hear that the show has gotten good reviews, and it was a pleasure to have John Tinker on this past Friday. In case you're wondering, yes, he is the son of the great Grant Tinker, the former head of both Mary Tyler Moore's production company, MTM, and NBC, responsible for a lot of great classic television over the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And he's also the brother of Mark Tinker, the director of such shows as NYPD Blue. If you want to catch that episode with John Tinker and other guests from this past Friday, including Terrence Gray, the head of the New York Television Festival, go to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised, or check out the podcast version at iTunes.com. When we come back, Emmy-nominated, Emmy-winning director Greg Yakonis will join us His latest work is his second work for Cinemax. It's Quarry. It premieres in early September. And yes, we will talk about the other thing we found about Grave today. He's also working on a Discovery Channel miniseries that he will both produce and direct. Greg will join me from Los Angeles after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, where the 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for CRS, the Caribbean Radio Show, music, talk, and a whole lot more. Next episode comes your way on September 9th, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. The Caribbean Radio Show exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, you can get the best of Blog Talk Radio 24/7. Just go to YouTube.com. Thanks for joining us here on Tomorrow We Televise at the top of the next hour. Delighted to have you with us. Thank you for those of you just joining us at the top. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. First of three episodes we are doing this week. First of two 90-minute episodes consecutively, one today, one on Wednesday. And we are delighted to have you with us. A wonderful guest coming your way this half hour. So we're happy to join us right at this time. And you can be involved in the conversation by giving us a ring. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. We have a very busy chat room today. Simon Apple 04 by name and guest 702 and 719 has just joined us in the room as well. Rick, our good friend from Philadelphia, was involved with our first guest earlier in the show. He's still in the room. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we do hear you. And while the problem is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. All the instructions, and other people can be live with you. In case you don't know, Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading proponent of spoken audio, digital entertainment, information, and inspiration, with over 180,000 titles to choose from. You can check out Audible.com with a free audiobook and a 3-day trial at audibletrial.com/televise. The last couple of years have been very big on Friday nights for Cinemax, the sister network of HBO, thanks to original programs like Strike Back, the Emmy Award nominees of Nick, and a show called Banshee, which our next guest was on as a director and executive producer of for four seasons. We had him on this program several years ago when the show was in its glory. And on September 9th, he will be back on Cinemax as executive producer and full-time director of its latest original series, Quarry. Joining us live from Los Angeles, Emmy Award-winning director Greg Yatanis. Greg, great to have you back.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me. I do want to just add that Banshee did win an Emmy. So we are Emmy-winning Banshee as well.
Terrific. And you won also the Emmy Award for House. That was your directing Emmy. So congrats, of course.
My directing Emmy. Yeah, we won a visual effects Emmy for the bus crash sequence on the pilot of Banshee, which was great that it, I always thought that the craft behind Banshee was, I wish it had been more celebrated. Like, I think it's a travesty that Banshee's not nominated or has never been nominated for a stunt Emmy. It was, it always broke my heart. Like, more than I ever wanted to see the show recognized, I wanted to see the craft of the show recognized. So I'm so glad you were such an early kind of adopter and really got the word out there. It's meaningful to be back to be able to talk to you about Quarry.
Well, it is a pleasure to have you back, and congratulations on the success you had with Banshee. And it's been a big role for Cinemax with that show, The Nick, now Outcast, the new Robert Kirkman drama. And this drama, Quarry, promises to be another great one. It's got a great topic. It's based on the books of Max Allen Collins, who worked with Chester Gould on the comic strip Dick Tracy. He was responsible for the book The Road to Perdition, which was a great film with Tom Hanks. With the terrific photography by the Oscar winner, the late, great Conrad Hall, who did The Outer Limits the first season. Talk about how you got involved with Quarry. And this time out, you're not only involved as executive producer, but you're also directing all the episodes.
Yeah, so to be able to, Quarry, it's set in 1972 Memphis. It has a backdrop of the Vietnam War, a polarizing war, not dissimilar to what we've experienced now, a polarizing election in the background, polarizing race issues, challenging Olympics. All of this in 72 really sets a backdrop that's very connectable and relatable today. And it's about a vet who returns home from Vietnam and cannot connect and find a job and finds that, that ostracizing that happened to many vets is deeply affecting him. And at his lowest point is recruited by the Dixie Mafia to become a hitman. And, it's an era and an area that, fascinated me. And in directing the entire season, a lot of that was born out of Cinemax wanting a very cinematic and singular vision. To be able to channel all the energy that I normally put into producing other directors, which I thoroughly enjoy and did at House and did at Banshee, to great success and great creative success, because I always feel that I can build on the shoulders of the director before me. You know, if somebody has a good idea, that becomes the vocabulary. So that's why I think Banshee kept evolving across all four of its seasons. Here, there was something about the research and the meditative aspects of the show that were important to protect and keep kind of one piece. There was an enormous amount of research that went into this project, and in a way, it'd be unfair for a guest director to parachute in and have to digest all this additional material as well as try to decide how they were going to go execute their episode. So I was able to this into one kind of big movie type schedule, and we could, you know, bring in great actors and do four episodes in a couple of days. I could, you know, really just continue to evolve the relationship with the actors and the director of photography. And it was probably the most creative experience I've had in my life.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the fact that we're starting to see more directors direct full television series, not just miniseries, but full television series? The great example of that is Sam Esmail doing all the episodes this year of Mr. Robot, which, in a very interesting way, you've got one of the executive producers involved, Steve Golan from Anonymous Content, working with you on this series.
You know, I think because Steve had also done True Detective, don't forget, you know, that created a culture of understanding this. I think part of it is, you know, a network or networks kind of have a traditional model in their head, and it's a combination of both producerially and the network really need to be partners in that concept. So for us, like with Mr. Robot, like with True Detective, like with Quarry, you know, we have all the scripts well ahead of schedule. I mean, my hope is my next series, Manifesto, I do the same thing, you know, to be able to do that, because I did find it to be a very streamlined way of working given the obstacles that schedule can provide. So there's benefits beyond the creative. There's also enormous, and I'm a huge efficiency nut to be able to do that. So I'm glad to see that trend going, but I think that the bigger thing the trend speaks to is that it's truly a collaborative medium. You know, TV was really considered a writer's medium when I first came into the business. And as TV got more ambitious and scale and scope and content, it really became, you know, a true partnership between writer and director. And I think, you know, we're seeing that more now.
When you and your colleagues, like Steve, like Michael Fuller and Graham Gordy, who worked on Rectify for Sundance Channel, and everybody else involved, did everyone think the same way? Let's make this cinematic. Let's make this noir, 1970s noir, and sort of suggest that your main character, Mac, is like entering his own personal, for lack of a better phrase, killing field.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, what's the question?
I was saying, was the thought about Quarry, was it to make this series very noirish, film noirish, cinematic noir, and to have Mac,
yes,
the central character, come across as he's entering his own, he's coming from one killing field in Vietnam, going now into his own personal killing field along the Mississippi River?
You know, the guys, you know, Graham Gordy especially, you know, has mentioned this, but the, you know, one of the big influences, or really one of the cornerstones of Quarry was this book, and forgive me on who wrote it, but it was called What It's Like to Go to War. And it really is a, you know, they distributed passages of that. We gave passages of that to the crew. You know, we wanted everybody in that same mindset. And from the very beginning, we've all been making the same show. And that was something that was really important as a partner in that, is that everybody understands, here's what it is. It's that intersection of what the network wants. And with us, you know, it was a language that had one foot in films of 1972, Friends of Eddie Coyle, Straight Time, French Connection, Death Wish, Deer Hunter, when the other foot in modern cinema, Place Beyond the Pines, Blue Valentine, Drive. So it was walking that line. So it's a 70s film made with a modern eye. So it, and again, like, for me, like when you tackle period, especially something like the 70s, which I think is done poorly more than it's done well, I always consider the best period film to be the Blade Runner. And the reason why is that, you know, they did such an artful job of a futuristic period film not being impressed with everything around it. Harrison Ford isn't impressed as car flies because cars fly. No more than I wanted anybody impressed about a record player or a dial phone. In Quarry, when you go back to watch Friends of Eddie Coyle, for example, you know, it's just part of the tapestry of the background. You're not fixated on it. So again, we wanted it so that we don't break the spell, but we don't get lost in the period and the period details. But the detailing is down to the finest detail and the deepest diving. Memphisite that would see this would completely appreciate kind of the level of research we did to create it. And in creating a noir, that was something we were all on board with. I mean, the, you know, Cinemax referred to this as grounded pulp, and that's kind of where it lands. For me, it's really a psychological drama. It's a hitman drama that houses post-traumatic stress, the deconstruction of a marriage, all the while satisfying the genre elements. And it's, you know, creates a phenomenally compelling story because it is so connectable. Everybody is so human, and their foibles are so human all throughout the story.
Emmy winning executive producer and director David Thomas is our guest this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Quarry is his second series for Cinemax. Banshee was the first, lasted 4 years. And Quarry premieres on Friday, September 9th, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on Cinemax. Greg is live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. 80 degrees at the top of the hour. Have a question or comment for Greg? Don't be shy. Pick up the voice and the phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name will get 702 and 740 into the room, and we appreciate whatever you have to say. As I mentioned a moment ago, this is the first of two 90-minute episodes we are doing this week, three we're doing overall, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And coming up on Wednesday, we have a terrific treat in store for you, not one, but two 2016 Emmy Award nominees. From Fox's popular series Gotham, going to year number three this September, we've got the director of photography, cinematographer Crescenzo Notary will join us. And also, one of three directors from Veep who got the nomination this year in the comedy category, director Dale Stern. Plus, the popular TV critic for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Rob Owen, will be along for this ride. It's all coming up Wednesday, 9 edition, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And coming up on Friday among our guests, the executive producer, writer, director of the new Crackle series, Startup, about a group of Miami subculture residents who want to get in the world of entrepreneurship and high technology, and they find high crime along the way. Ben Katai, the executive producer, writer, director of the new Crackle series, Startup, that also premieres the week that Quarry premieres as well. He will be with us live Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Greg, how did you pick Logan Marshall Green to be Max? What about him and his, and the way he approached the character intrigued you and everybody in saying, that's our person?
Logan actually predates my involvement. He was involved in the project very early on. So it was a matter of just Logan and I continuing our dialogue on approach. You know, I really made Logan my creative partner. You know, that's an ongoing daily dialogue. I mean, he's in practically every scene, practically every day of shooting across the 85-day schedule. And, you know, when you're day in, day out, you know, the approach can't be to push an actor around like a piece of furniture. You know, it's really an ongoing discussion of the vision and the take and, you know, the best to approach it. And really for me in directing, my style on Quarry was to make my work as invisible as possible. So, you know, I joke that I try to just stay out of everybody's way, but really, you know, my method really works from the actors out. So actors and writing out. So the visual approach is very minimalist. It's the least amount of cuts, the least amount of interruption. I wanted, you know, an environment where Logan was able to have momentum and momentum of that work and to be able to explore and make choices, that we weren't racing against a schedule. So it was very much an actor's environment. I think everybody left feeling that not only was the material such a pleasure to work in and well elevated beyond a lot of what's on television, but also the process and environment was very conducive to doing your best work. And, you know, I know that Logan, you know, had said from time to time he had modeled aspects of Mac after his own father, and his process is, you know, phenomenally intense, but then at the same time, completely accessible as a director to be able to collaborate and have that dialogue. It was definitely one of the more fruitful collaborations I've had since, you know, I left House, and Hugh Laurie was was why I stayed for as long as I stayed at House, because every day in, day out, working with him was such an absolute pleasure.
Two other key members of the cast I want to get your thoughts on. One is Judy Balfour, who plays dramatic interest in Mac's life. And then we have the crime boss, who is played by Peter Mullen, who was so good in a HBO miniseries several years ago called Oz Kitteridge, with the wonderful Frances McDormand of Fargo fame, having the lead role as Olive and winning the Emmy Award for it.
Jody, I mean, the thing I love is that, you know, in addition to Peter and Jody, you know, we had a large international cast. In fact, pretty much of all the main series regulars, Logan was really the only American voice in that, which was, you know, exciting to get because, you know, a lot of people were playing Americans for the first time and flawlessly. I mean, this was Peter Mullen's first American role. And, you know, I mean, people remember him from Top of the Lake or to some extent all of I had admired Peter's work for years. I loved him in a miniseries called Red Riding. And he is a force, but a sweetheart. And Jody, you know, had every day Jody was doing something that she's never been given the opportunity before. And it was funny because it's the perfect, you know, you bring your gears. You know, there was other actresses in the mix for Joni. And, you know, it was a combination of finding the chemistry with Logan, but also the quality of work. And I was workshopping ahead of the screen tests and, you know, Jody did terrific, but she just like, she pulled out gears I never knew possible when it came time to actually do her screen test. And it was literally like show-stopping, mind-blowing how great she was. And, you know, we continue to stay in touch, and that craft is something I'm looking forward to watching her continue to evolve.
How do you describe minimalist in terms of your approach as a director? When you say minimalist, is it, how does it show up on the screen, and how do you still find a way to make it be minimalist but also be distinctive?
You know, that is probably the best question I've been asked since doing press for Quarry, and it is a great question, and then thank you for asking me to elaborate on that. You know, Banshee and other shows, you know, I've become, as I've gotten, you know, matured as an artist and, you know, continue to work. I came into this being called what was called a shooter, you know, and a shooter is someone that is very visual but it's also a backhanded compliment because it kind of means you don't know how to work with actors. And working on my craft as a director with actors and really being able to work from performance and really work from intention, is a place that I have tried to really focus on. And with Quarry, especially, you know, the minimalism comes in the sense that the world is all there. You know, it's created kind of a piece and of a tone so that you're not snapped out of it. You know, we avoid musical tropes, costuming tropes, visual tropes, you know, that have become part of that genre. But when I say that my work is minimalist, I'm doing what's called less coverage. So coverage is, you know, in TV, as you watch television, you're probably used to watching like a wide shot, then like over the shoulder, and then closer in, and then closer in, and then you turn around, and everything kind of matches, and nothing has a strong point of view. And that's often due to the volume of work that needs to be done in the day. There's a kind of like the basic stuff that you need. And so I went into Quarry wanting the camera to be as not showy as possible, that we weren't doing a lot of camera movement, that we took a strong point of view of each character, meaning we would, I'd really stay in scenes with Mac's point of view. When you see the pilot, you know, we're often traveling handheld with Mac. We're not going to places where the camera kind of couldn't go or would anticipate his arrival. You know, I always wanted the camera to be very grounded and focused with him. So, and even in our framing, it's, you know, we use like William Eggleston and Todd Hedo as kind of photographic references, you know, some of the negative space and off framing of Todd Hedo's photography and sparseness of some of his imagery. And we mix that with, a strong handheld camera that was kind of found, you know, it's imperfect. And that was something actually our operator had to really learn, because he's trained to make things as good as possible. And you kind of want that unexpectedness of not feeling that you know how the scene is going to go. So you've panned over to an actor before they've said their line. You kind of need to play catch up. So again, I did very little coverage. You know, I only cut when I need to, I only shot what I needed to. I let scenes just mostly play out in longer takes, and yet still it's a propulsive genre piece.
We have a few more minutes with the executive producer and director of Cinemax's new drama, Greg Gattanis. The drama is Quarry, and it begins Friday, September 9th, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, right after the end of the first season of Outcast, which I believe has also been already renewed for season number 2. That's the current drama on Friday nights, based on the work of the wonderful Walking Dead creator and graphics novelist, Mr. Robert Kirkman, who's got his own production company and all sorts of things in the works for all over the place. Anyway, Greg joins us live from Los Angeles this hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum from the other coast of New York. Happy you're with us to kick off your week. If you have a question or comment, you've got time to get it in at 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04, and then get 702 and 740. It's obvious, Greg, that we are in this incredible era of scripted television. And one of the outgrowths is it seems that television is taking a more auteur look, whether it is what you're doing with a show like Quarry or Banshee, what John Ridley is doing with American Crime on ABC, what Sam Esmail was doing with Mr. Robot, where the camera is very disorienting, or he'll find a way to do a satire on everything from the situation comedy to the smart home. What do you make of this world of scripted TV that you are now in, and so many ways that you can do a television program?
Well, again, it's a good question, and it's something that, you know, it is happening out there. And, you know, I love seeing more writer directors out there like Sam. I like seeing the work continue to evolve. I love what Stranger Things were doing. I'm somebody who celebrates when I see a great show like The Night Of, I'm out there like banging the gong of great television. And then I feel like there are few and far between. I mean, I'm noticing in the marketplace a rush to create content, but then along the way, you know, being able to trust that content to a strong point of view. And that's, I think, what we're seeing and the importance of that and the value of that. Being able to tackle things with small cameras has also been pretty great. You know, that's the technology has changed, so it's allowed for more freedom of how we work. And, you know, whether we were starting some of this on House, so it's great to see it that it's been like adopted and evolved, and I can take that work and further it along. If you saw like that season 3 sequence of Banshee, you know, which was all done with lipstick, you know, headstick cameras and GoPros, you know, for 20 minutes of the show, was probably one of the, you know, the most fun I've had since film school, creating something. So the rules are kind of out the window, and it's a great time. Probably what, you know, cinema was like in the late 60s, early 70s, where people were just really, you know, evolving it. Now with that comes, you know, some crap, I'm sure, but when people nail it, they nail it in a way that, you know, I think should be celebrated and continue to be celebrated.
And we heard from John Goldman, who is executive producing Harlan Davidson's Discovery Channel's latest miniseries coming on Labor Day night. You're going to be joining them for their next dramatic project, Manifesto, which is now being planned as an anthology series. And again, it's going to be another, it looks like another case of you'll be directing all the episodes. What do you think about that project? And also, it seems that you're on this crime streak. You got Banshee, you have Quarry, Manifesto. It seems like you're becoming like the crime noir, crime story director of our time.
I'll take it. You know, the thing was, like, when the mid-level movie went away in the 90s, you know, as the 90s were coming to a close, you know, with it went the movies I would have made. I was really built for and should have been making the kind of 90s thrillers that we've all come to know. And TV's really become my stomping ground to be able to do that. I mean, I may end up directing all episodes of Manifesto. I don't know yet, but it's, you know, it appeals to me because it is a singular 8-episode story about the guy who caught the Unabomber and teaming up with, you know, John, who's got such a legacy both of his own and with his family, has been great. You know, like John's such a true producer, and that is hard to find, you know. I mean, so often you've got, every show has 10 executive producers, you know, maybe two of which render services. John is one of those like real hands-on, very creative and diplomatic problem solvers that I've really like tried to study from. So it's been a phenomenal experience. Andrew Sadrowski, who wrote the series, had topped the blacklist a few years ago for a script he wrote. And it's been a phenomenal collaboration. So not only have I kind of worked into this crime genre, but I've also found a place where, you know, these are young writers that are, I'm often shepherding through the process, whether, you know, Jonathan Tropper wasn't produced at the time, Graham and Michael weren't really produced at the time, Andrew wasn't produced at the time. So I think being able to come in and provide guidance without having to get another writer to lord over them has been great, because it becomes equitable and we each enhance and pick up the other person's deficits.
Quarry, the latest new drama from Cinemax, will premiere Friday, September 9th, 10 p.m. Eastern at Pacific Time after Outcast concludes its first season run. That's Friday, September 9th, 10 p.m. Eastern at Pacific Time on Cinemax. Check your local listing for it. Cinemax is available in the area on cable and satellite. More details about the program online, find it at www.cinemax.com. www.cinemax.com. And I have a hunch that another winner from Cinemax is en route to you. Greg Thomas, Emmy-winning director of not only Quarry, but The Banshee, other shows as well. It's been a pleasure to have you again. Congratulations on getting Quarry off the ground. Congratulations also on the new assignment with Manifesto with Discovery Channel. Looking forward to seeing that as well. And as I mentioned with John earlier in the program, we would love to have both of you together when Manifesto premieres. But once again, great pleasure to have you with us. All the very best to you and your crew for another terrific show and hopefully an even greater run on Cinemax.
Excellent. Thanks, brother. I appreciate it, man. It was great.
You're welcome, Greg. Take care. All the greatest.
Talk soon. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Greg Thomas, Emmy-winning director and executive producer of Quarry, joining us live from Los Angeles. Want to thank all my guests for being with us today. Hope you enjoyed the program. Come on back Wednesday. We got not one, but two 2016 Emmy nominees joining us from Fox's popular Monday Night series Gotham, going to season three next month. We've got the director of photography Emmy nominee Crescenzo Notary, and one of three directors nominated for their work on Veep this past season, director and Emmy nominee Dale Stern, plus Rob Owen, the popular TV critic of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. On Friday, among our guests, the executive producer, writer, and director of the new Crackle series, Startup, also premiering September, Ben Kate, he's a newcomer. We'll enjoy hearing from him. And finally, 1 week from today, among our guests, the popular breakout star of MTV's Girl Code, about to do her own series, loosely, exactly Nicole, Nicole Byer himself, will be with us. If you came in on today's show late, or you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. You can also check out our podcasts. They're available to you on iTunes.com. And if you have Apple TV, the new version, go to the iTunes Podcast app 24/7 and check our episodes there. Also, all the Blog Talk Radio shows are there as well. We love hearing from you. So what's your thoughts about our guests today and the shows they're up to? What's your thoughts on where TV is at and where it's going? We love the dialogue with you. So email me, SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. Please include your name and where you're from. You can also use that email to participate in our Classic Trivia Question of the Week. And we have a feature coming up called The Show to Know that we do regularly. Is there a TV show you like that doesn't get enough attention? Well, if you let us know, give it to our attention, and we spotlight it on our program, you will get the credit. It's SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. UBCSimonTWBT. However you get to communicate with us, we appreciate it. Why? Because what you say matters. And that's the bottom line. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not to say those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. And he tells Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator of this very enterprise, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow's Show Live is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. For Tomorrow's Show Live, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your Monday. Back Wednesday, same time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, another 90-minute edition coming your way. You know where. Blog Talk Radio. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.